Good morning, I'm Tepi Cruz. It's Friday, June 21st. San Diegans are calling on Congress to act on gun legislation. More on that next. But first, let's do the headlines. The MTS Board of Directors yesterday approved a more than $448 million budget for the new fiscal year. The budget will fully fund current service levels on trolley lines and bus routes. It also includes MTS security improvements added earlier in the year, like more transit officers. The budget does not include the trolley and bus service increases that were planned for previously. Summer is officially here, and this weekend's heat is on par with the kickoff of the season. Tomorrow in the inland valleys and mountain areas, there will be a heat advisory in effect from 10 in the morning until 8 at night, when temperatures can reach into the high 90s. An excessive heat watch goes into effect in the desert areas tomorrow morning and will last through Thursday evening. Temps are expected to reach up to 115 degrees. By the coast, temps will be in the high 70s all weekend long. But even with all the heat, the skies won't stay clear. The National Weather Service says there's a chance of light rain tomorrow night into Sunday in all parts of the county. Speaking of all this hot summer weather, ice cream sounds like a good idea. And a local ice cream shop just got some nationwide recognition. Ann's Dry Cleaning in North Park was selected as the best independent ice cream shop in the U.S. by USA Today. The shop opened in 2018 and was named after the dry cleaning business it replaced on Adams Avenue. USA Today says its selections are picked by experts, then voted on by readers. To celebrate its win, Ann's will be selling $1 gelatos on July 1st until the store sells out. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Hey, hey, hey. This is Parker Edison, host of the Parker Edison Project on KPBS. The cool thing about joining KPBS is you make one simple donation, and that money ripples into supporting everything else you see and hear on KPBS, including podcasts like this one you're listening to right now, making a place for fresh voices and perspectives to be heard. And that's music to my ears. Become a member today. Just go to kpbs.org, click that blue Give Now button, and donate what you can. All right? Thanks.
A week after the Supreme Court struck down the federal ban on bump stocks, Representative Scott Peters says Congress needs to act to protect people's safety. Reporter Alexander Nguyen has more.
Congressman Scott Peters and local leaders are calling on Congress to act following the Supreme Court decision to overturn a ban on bump stocks. It's a device that lets semi-automatic rifle shoot up 400 to 800 rounds a minute, according to experts.
We need elected officials to put aside politics, do what's right to protect people, especially our children.
Peters says because of election year politics, not much can be done now, but he's co-sponsoring a number of gun safety bills for Congress to act on once the election is over.
Afterward, we're going to have to work with a president of the United States who's been elected by the people. And at that point, I think there will be opening for discussion and for progress.
One of the bills closes the loophole allowing bump stocks, while two others strengthen regulations on ghost guns. According to SDPD, more than 400 ghost guns were recovered between 2021 and 2023. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
Over the last decade, California lost half of its recycling centers, which means fewer opportunities for people to recycle their bottles and cans. That's alarming from an environmental perspective, but there is also a financial impact. It's now much harder for people to get back their bottle deposits. KPBS investigative reporter Scott Raw joins me now to discuss how the state is planning to transform how we recycle in the coming years. Scott, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
To start, you published an investigation this week into the decline of recycling centers. What did you find?
So to start, let's talk about what is California's bottle deposit program. If you go to the store to buy, say, a can of soda, you pay for the soda, and then you pay an extra 5 cents. Sometimes it's 10 cents if it's a larger container. And that isn't a fee, it's a deposit. And the idea is to provide an incentive for people to return those bottles and cans. When you do, you get back that nickel and dime. So we wanted to look at, with recycling centers closing, what's happening with all of these unclaimed bottle deposits. And what we found is the state has a fund where all that money goes, and it's ballooned in recent years. As of last year, the state was sitting on more than $800 million, $820 million to be exact, which is a tremendous amount of money. It's increased quite a bit in recent years. And we talked to the president of the Container Recycling Fund, Susan Collins, and she said this growth in the fund is a problem.
The excess growth in the fund is the result of a program that isn't serving consumers as well as it should be, which turns their deposit effectively into a tax.
So we not only found that the fund is growing, but we also found that state leaders often turn to this money that's sitting there and use it to plug holes in the budget when money is tight. And we found that, you know, these loans, they're often are always repaid, but it can take years. And at times it's put a strain on this fund that really is actually supposed to be reinvested back into the recycling system.
A whopping $820 million in unclaimed bottle deposits. That's incredible. But the state has a plan to overhaul how people return bottles and cans, which would require investing a lot of that money back into the recycling infrastructure. What changes are they looking at?
That's right. Things are going to be changing starting next year and the coming years when it comes to recycling bottles and cans. The state wants to invest in more, you know, novel or new approaches in recycling, such as mobile recycling centers, which move to different locations depending on the day of the week. Also, bag drop options where people can drop off their recycling and get their deposits back, or reverse vending machines where you can kind of drop your bottles and cans in. It's also going to change who has to accept recyclable materials. Right now, many consumers don't realize that if they don't have a recycling center in their area, they likely are able to bring, or supposed to be able to bring, their bottles and cans to grocery stores, convenience stores. The problem is a lot of these retailers just refuse to accept the bottles and cans. So the system right now isn't working. But what the new program will do is allow those retailers to pool resources and say, okay, instead of individually accepting these bottles and cans, we can pool resources and set up a kind of small mini recycling center somewhere in the neighborhood so people have a place to bring back their recyclables.
So what are recycling advocates saying about this?
Well, the ones I spoke to said, look, mobile recycling centers, reverse vending machines, these are good. They're an important piece of the ecosystem. But they said recycling centers, traditional recycling centers, those worked 10 years ago. That had the recycling rate up above 80%. We need to focus on getting those back up and running. I spoke to Mark Murray. He's the executive director of Californians Against Waste. And he said that if there was a $2,500 subsidy for small recycling centers, that would keep them afloat.
For that small investment over the next 3 to 5 years, we could have the 400 to 500 community-based recycling centers we need.
For listeners who want to do their part but find themselves living in one of these recycling deserts, what can they do?
Well, they can use their blue bin curbside system. That's an important piece of the recycling, you know, infrastructure. Those bottles and cans, they get returned. Now, the companies that operate those curbside systems and process the recyclables, they're the ones who get back the nickel and dime. But if people are just concerned about making sure their bottles and cans are recycled, that's a good way to do it. You know, they can also separate their bottles and cans, leave them beside their dumpster or maybe in the alley, and give people an opportunity who want to get back those nickels and dimes, an opportunity to take those bottles and cans to a place that can be recycled. And then beyond that, looking forward, you know, people should be on the lookout for new opportunities in their neighborhood that may be popping up for recycling. It may be a mobile recycling center. It might be a reverse vending machine. But we should, hopefully, in the next year and in the years after, see new opportunities popping up in communities in terms of how you can return those bottles and cans.
All great suggestions. Thank you, Scott. And thank you for joining me and giving us all this information.
Thank you.
The California Public Utilities Commission, or the CPUC, has rejected a bid by AT&T to no longer be the phone service carrier of the last resort throughout California. SciTech reporter Thomas Fudge says it's a win for people who still use landlines.
Being a carrier of last resort in California means the company is required to provide basic telephone service. That often means installing and maintaining old-fashioned copper landlines, and the state's biggest carrier of last resort is AT&T. The company asked the CPUC to lift that requirement. They argued maintaining landlines is often unnecessary and it prevents investment in modern technologies. But the commission got thousands of complaints from older people and those in rural areas where wireless and fiber optic technology is spotty or expensive. Commissioners said their decision was made to protect access to basic phone service, regardless of income or geographic location. The commission said they will consider adapting their rules to evolving technology and market conditions. Thomas Fudge, KPBS News.
Father Joe's Villages offers free preschool to children of parents living at their shelter. Reporter Katie Heisen attended the world's cutest graduation yesterday.
The graduates wriggle in 3-foot gowns and caps.
Liberty Lucky!
Liberty started at Father Joe's Therapeutic Child Care Center in diapers, scribbling. Now almost 4, she's potty trained and starting to trace her own name. Her mom, Amber, cheers her on as she accepts her diploma.
My husband passed away from cancer a few years ago, and they actually did a lot of play therapy sessions because there was some issues with, you know, her acting out and asking for her father.
The free childcare let Amber Lucky work on getting sober, graduate from a property management program, get certified as a peer support specialist, and eventually find housing. And it taught Liberty social skills, how to be in a classroom, and confidence.
Within 2 weeks of doing TK readiness, she said something like, "Oh, mommy, I got an instrument from a toy chest." And I said, "What did you say?" That was a big word.
Liberty's favorite part of preschool?
Play with Play-Doh.
Play with Play-Doh.
Oh, that's good.
Then me and Michael.
Michael's her best friend. He leads the class in a final performance. Katie Heisen, KPBS News.
Southwestern College is inviting the community to cruise into college this weekend. They're teaming up with the United Lowrider Coalition to highlight educational opportunities at the school. Marcos Arellano, also known as Mr. Rabbit, is with the coalition and says community college can help give people life and career direction.
A lot of people, as you're growing up, don't know what direction to go to. So as families, you know, Southwestern College is inviting them. Hey, come on out. There's going to be a big event of cars. They're going to also have free food. They can register.
About 60 lowriders will be part of the Cruising Into College event from 9 to 3 tomorrow at Southwestern College in Chula Vista. Young poets are inscribing their words on the pavement of a City Heights alley. The public art project is being unveiled tomorrow. Reporter Katie Heisen brings us there.
The words of Samira Hassan's poem surround her feet.
The Spaniards now wear blue and black. Their faces still white.
She wrote it to the Kumeyaay people. She relates to their struggles with displacement and policing.
They continue to place the black ravens in cells, watching them closely.
Hassan's family immigrated from Somalia. Almost half of City Heights residents are foreign-born. Rising rents are pushing them out.
Our people's graveyards no longer exist. They've built their homes over it. Our families no longer live here.
Now 19, Hassan used to roller skate this alley outside the rec center. She tells herself one day she'll buy back the nearby house her family can no longer afford.
I took my first steps in that home. I learned how to read and write in that home. So it's really heartbreaking every time I drive past it.
Now, she and 4 other City Heights poets are leaving a message that will stay, even if they can't.
Poems that describe me, my community, my womanhood, my blackness. Permanently plastered.
They cut thousands of letters from road material and burned them into the pavement. Now anyone who walks on this piece of City Heights will be faced with its history.
Katie Heisen, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. This podcast is produced by Emmalyn Mohebi and edited by Brooke Ruth. We'd like to thank editors Joe Guerin and Nick McVicker for helping the podcast team this week. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Join us again on Monday to start the week together with the day's top stories. Producer Emmalyn Mohebi will be filling in for me again on Monday while I anchor our KPBS Morning Edition show. I'm Debbie Cruz. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.